Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Alan Sweetbaum, and I represent Zychronix. As you are aware, there are three issues on appeal that we raised in our opening brief and also dealt with in the reply brief. The first is the court's ruling regarding the motion to compel production. The second issue is the court's ruling regarding the failure, our alleged or allegation that Advantech failed to repair some of the units, and then, of course, the court's ruling regarding the attorney's fees and costs. On the understanding, I now have 14 minutes and 35 seconds. I will start with the first, see how far I can get, and just go as far as I can. As I indicated just a few minutes ago, the first issue, the motion to compel issue, is fact intensive, and I think some context is important. So just briefly, Your Honor, obviously the relationship between Zychronix and Advantech was that Advantech was going to manufacture a home automation device, and actually quite a number of them for Zychronix. Zychronix intended to resell those units. Actually, they were going to resell it to a retailer who would then sell them to various hotel properties around the United States. The contract is obviously important here and provided how those or how the price would be calculated with respect to each unit. I've blown up right here. A portion of the contract is obviously in the record. The way the price was calculated was the BOM, the bill of materials, plus, depending on how many units were manufactured, 20 or 25% markup. That's base cost plus, to use, I guess, a construction jargon. The bill of materials is important. It's basically a list of all the materials that go into this electronic device and the cost of these. Some of them are just, you know, a half a cent each, but they're all supposed to be listed on there. And what was supposed to happen was there was supposed to be a costed BOM, a BOM with all the costs set forth on it that was supposed to be approved by both parties. The real problem here is that that did not happen. What happened is that there were invoices that were sent by Advantech to Zychronix setting forth the amounts that were owed on a particular date of the invoice. Zychronix, with the exception of the last $7,000, paid all of that, but they never got the costed BOM. They believed throughout this entire process that they were being overcharged. There's a lot of allegations in Advantech's brief regarding the fact that there was no evidence. In fact, Your Honor, there was lots and lots of circumstantial evidence. Just some of the stuff that we referenced in our brief, we did an independent verification of the parts that were identified and came up with wildly disparate numbers. There was also, Your Honor, if you can get there was an email that was sent to us by an Advantech employee that showed that we were being billed manufacturing costs.
Well, let me interrupt you just a second. Mr. Franks, do you have any objection to our looking at this document?
I haven't seen it, but there, I think I know what it is.
All right, would you show it to him in advance, Mr. Sweetbaum? I don't have a problem using demonstratives, but it is better practice to show the other side and make sure we don't have a fight about it.
These are all from the record.
Okay.
Yes, no, well, I have that too.
All right, that's fine.
Your Honor, what we have here is you can see an email that went out that very clearly shows that we're being billed manufacturing costs and we're not supposed to be billed manufacturing costs. And then we get a bill for $72,455, which we paid. We paid it under protest, but we paid it. And so, Your Honor, also, when this contract expired, we hired another company to do the manufacturing, a company called Portwell that billed us considerably less. So to say there's no evidence is absolutely false. We, in fact, had lots and lots of circumstantial evidence, all of which was put on during the trial. The issue here, Your Honor, has to do with the direct evidence. And of course, the direct evidence is the evidence of what Advantech paid and then what it billed for Zychronix. That evidence we know existed. It absolutely existed.
Mr. Sweetbaum, if I can interrupt you, I'm a little confused as to what issue we're on.
We're on a motion to compel.
All right. I keep waiting. You're talking a lot about the evidence.
We're trying. Yes.
But we got findings. We're not the fact finder.
Your Honor, okay. Rule 26 that disclosure should have been produced. It wasn't. We asked for it in request for production of documents. It came up during the deposition of the president of Advantech, K.C. Liu, that it was supposed to be there. And it was there. We asked for it in a follow-up letter, and we filed a motion to compel.
Can you show me on this, Mr. Sweetbaum? I've looked at the discovery myself, And I get, maybe your best argument is you ask for it in the deposition and you follow it up with a letter. I'm not seeing it so clearly asked for in the discovery requests themselves, and I assure you I may have missed it. Can you help me out and show me where exactly you asked for this pricing information?
Yes, Your Honor.
And I have the same concern, because that's what was not clear to me.
Okay, Your Honor, we asked for, I think it was request for production number 7. It's set forth in our brief where we asked for all the information. Now, at that time, we did not know how the information was stored. What we found out when we took the deposition of Mr. Casey Liu was that they had a software program that he referred to as an ERP, an Enterprise Resource Planning software program, where all of this information is stored. And when we found it out, because we didn't know this information, this software program existed prior to the time that we took the deposition, we found it out, we sent a follow-up letter asking for it.
Can you show me that specifically, though? I'm trying to find the document request. It's pretty broad. I mean, you got to request documents with reasonable particularity, and that's what I'm trying to figure out. Where did you specifically ask for the pricing information?
I believe, Your Honor, it was in the request for production of documents. I can't cite it to you right now. I recall when I reviewed the briefs actually over the weekend that we actually cited it in, I think it may have been the reply brief that okay. We cited it. And we set forth and we quoted the request for production. But Your Honor, it's also important. Yes.
Sorry to interrupt.
Absolutely.
In your brief, you point out requests for production of documents 2, 3, 5, 6, and 7, I believe.
Yeah, and actually it's on page 3 of our reply brief. Is non-patent interrogatory number 7, delineate the product manufacturing cost that Advantech charged Zyconics, including but not limited to the unit prices charged by Advantech to Zyconics. So,
how is that related? The information you want is their underlying pricing information, right?
Yes.
This seems to ask for their product manufacturing cost that they charged. Not
that they charge Zychronics.
Zychronics.
Answered that. I'm sorry.
No,
Judge,
we're on the same page.
Exactly.
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe it was answered. I think that was broad enough. I think it should have been produced in the Rule 26A1 disclosures. I should think it should have been responded in response to our letter. And then, Your Honor, when we were told it would be produced. Yes.
Sorry to interrupt. Manufacturing costs were not charged to Zychronics. Our charges to Zychronics were based on the pricing formula in the manufacturing agreement Schedule B. That was the answer.
Okay. I don't dispute that was the answer. I interpret that request to be broader than that information. And of course, as I just indicated, we didn't know about the software program. We found out about it, made a request. We were told it would be produced. We were specifically told by Mr. Franks that it would be produced. It wasn't, he actually told us to hold off filing a motion to compel, and then we did file a motion to compel. And in fact, I think all of these arguments, which are in fact raised by Mr. Franks in his response brief, were arguments that were waived. These are arguments that should have been made in response to our motion to compel. It was not made. We specifically asked in the motion to compel, there's no question about that, that's part of the record, that we asked for this information in the motion, and there was no response, and the motion was not ruled on until the morning of trial, when what Judge Lemon stated was that it was moot.
And I'll tell you, Mr. Sweetbaum, I have some concerns about that one, and I'll ask Mr. Franks about that. I'm having trouble understanding how it was moot. But can you tell me how it is you didn't abandon this issue? And I don't think you waived it, and I think waiver and abandonment are different. But when you agree with the court that AI would be disruptive, let's go forward, that causes me some concern.
Well,
I think that was you as the trial lawyer, but not, I apologize.
I was the trial lawyer, and I specifically reviewed that portion of the transcript this weekend. And Judge Lemon stated, she made a whole point about how I should have called the court earlier. And of course, many motions are not ruled on until the morning of trial. That might be a bit presumptuous to call the clerk. Sometimes I do it, sometimes I don't do it. But when it was apparent that she was not going to continue the trial. I candidly didn't want a continuance of the trial. I wasn't abandoning the motion. I wasn't intending to waive the motion. She made the point that it would be disruptive.
But when were you going to ask for the documents then? After the trial? That's a little late.
No, well, Your Honor, I believed I had the circumstantial evidence to establish it, and I also believe that I can continue to make arguments about the motion during the course of the trial. I certainly didn't believe that witnesses of the Fantech would be able to get on the witness stand and to testify as to what these documents presumably said, which is exactly what happened. And actually, as I recall, they were actually responding to questions asked by Judge Lemon when she was asking what did they say, and they said exactly what we billed them. And then they said they actually gave someone at Zycronics Taiwan these documents. I have never seen these documents. We know that they exist. Your Honor, I intended to go forward. I didn't really have any option at that point. I mean, I think to the extent that you're considering whether I abandoned it, you have to consider what my options were. I certainly couldn't walk out of the courtroom and file an extraordinary writ with the Supreme Court at that point. My option was to go forward with the trial based upon the information that I had. I mistakenly believed at the time that I had the circumstantial evidence to establish that there was that we could show overcharging. It was the Portwell contract. We had other emails that were produced in discovery, if you can show it, Josh, that actually showed that this is an email from a Begonia Sue, who was an employee of Advantech, who actually says in here, if I'm looking at the right one, certainly Mr. Franks is willing to come around, that this is an internal email, that they were going to bury the manufacturing costs. So when I had this information, they were disclosed as exhibits, they were used as exhibits at trial.
Sure, but the court rejected it. I mean,
she decided to not believe it.
Right, and that's a credibility call for the fact.
There's no question she has that right. Any finder of fact has that right to determine credibility.
But couldn't you say at the beginning, instead of saying, I agree, Judge, it'd be disruptive, let's go forward. Judge, we need a ruling on this motion. It's critically important. It sounds to me like you made a strategic, and I'm not at all criticizing you. I mean, I've been where you are, I promise. You made a strategic decision. I think I got the evidence. I'm going to go forward now.
And Your Honor, that was a strategic decision because I didn't have any other options.
Well,
I wasn't
you
could have
said,
Judge, motion to compel.
But you could have said, Judge, I need a ruling on this.
But she issued a ruling. The ruling was that it was moot, which it was not moot. this is the direct evidence, and the direct evidence is, I mean, this is what will either prove or disprove the existence or non-existence of overcharging. These documents exist. We know that they exist. Now, there's other things the judge could have done that I also argued in my closing argument, and we discussed extensively in our briefs, which was that the judge could have, typically you would order the jury, you would have directed the jury, but here.
Adverse interest,
exactly. Which is a spoliation remedy, but this is very similar to a spoliation issue.
Doesn't that presume a violation? You get an adverse inference. The court never made that finding, said it was moot. I'm just wondering on that argument. I hear you. I'm just wondering whether that puts the cart before the horse. Can we actually say the court erred in not giving an adverse inference before there's any finding of a violation?
I have thought of it. You are addressing issues I have given extensive thought to. You're exactly right. I think the mistake, I think the error was ruling the motion moot. I think if that's what this panel determines, that it is moot, I think it's reversible error. I think this case should be remanded for a determination and for the evidence to be produced. So I hope I've addressed your question. I haven't gotten to the warranty issue, the attorney's fees issue. I have 1 minute and 18 seconds, and if I could reserve that, I would appreciate
you may, it. Mr. Sweetbaum. Thank you very much. Mr. Franks?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. And counsel, I am Richard Franks, bar number 4300, and I represent Advantech on this matter. As Mr. Sweetbaum did, I would like to take just a moment to discuss the factual context of this case before I address the four issues that, actually I counted four, Mr. Sweetbaum said three, perhaps he combined two of those in terms of his assignment of error. This case has been in the courts for 3 years, 3.5 years. It was based on a contract wherein Advantech was going to build some home automation units for Zycronics manufacture the platform but not supply the software. It did this on the basis of a contract that it thought if everything went right, it could break even, maybe make a percent or two. What it was looking for was a project integrator to provide an outlet or a marketplace for a manufactured platform that it was developing in the home automation business. It took this case, or took this project, on a markup of, as Mr. Sweetbaum said, 20% or 25%, depending on where they were in the progress of the total number of units to be manufactured. It normally worked on a manufacturing cost plus 40%. That's irrelevant. They made the deal. But it indicates the difficulty that Advantech was facing trying to make this project work and the effort that it ultimately had to make to supply these units. It occurred somewhere during the mid portion of the contract performance that that Psychonics believed that Advantech was cheating. There was a price hiding clause in the contract that basically said you charge the BOM, bill of materials, plus 20 or 25%. What Psychonics chose to do, either at that point or sometime earlier, was to task a lady in Taiwan to work the phones day in and day out, which she did. And her job was to find components in the marketplace to compare with the BOM prices that Advantech was charging. The theory being that if they could find a lower BOM price, that there was some evidence of price hiding or fraud or overcharging.
And if I can interrupt here, Mr. Franks, because yes. I have some questions I want to make sure we get to. You won that battle with the district court. I got it. The district court understood the argument you're making now. Tell me how the motion to compel was moot.
The way I understand the sequence on that, the motion, Mr. Sweetbaum, in his opening statement, brought up the motion to compel. And I was looking for the actual transcript record a moment ago, and I couldn't find it before my time came. But he was asking about the motion to compel, and the judge indicated that she thought that motion had been resolved. Then Mr. Sweetbaum said, I'm definitely going ahead with the trial. And to grant the motion now would be, and he stopped, and Judge Lemon said, disruptive. At that point, she said, I'm going to move on this motion as moot. My recollection, and I believe this is borne out by the record, is that her ruling that it was moot occurred after Mr. Sweetbaum said he was going ahead and it would be disruptive. The record is the best evidence of that, and I wish I could read it to you. It's in my brief. I couldn't find it.
I appreciate your candor on that, Judge.
Counsel, Mr. Sweetbaum agreed that it would be disruptive in response to the court's ruling, or in asking for a ruling on the motion to compel. Didn't the court state that it would be disruptive, and Mr. Sweetbaum agreed, yes, disruptive?
Yes, is that not what I said?
Yeah.
Did I say it backwards?
And the sequence.
Okay. I think that's the way it went. She said disruptive, and he said yes, disruptive, and then she said, I'm going to pass on the motion as being moot.
Hey, I'm going to ask you just to go totally off your track, and I'll let you get back on your pace. One issue that I, let me not ask that. Look, you go ahead. I apologize.
Anyway, cutting as quickly as possible to the assignments of error. The basic story was that there really wasn't any hard evidence at trial that Advantech was overcharging. There was this issue about varying manufacturing costs, and as you said, Your Honor, we won that issue. The judge said there was an indication that Advantech wanted to charge manufacturing costs on a component that they made to incorporate into the unit where they couldn't charge manufacturing costs. They went to Zychronics and asked them if that would be permissible. Mr. Gamey, the president, or the CEO of Zychronics said, no, that's not permissible. And that was the end of that. They didn't charge it. They also gave Zychronics a $360,000 credit note, which the plaintiff made great hay of in its briefing, that it was an accounting function of Zychronics or Advantech, and it was never accepted by Zychronics. They didn't have to accept it. Basically, what Advantech did was say, Zychronics, we're going to square our books internally. We've charged you $360,000 more than you've paid. We want to get out of this contract as soon as possible. We're not going to fight this issue. We're going to reduce the outstanding billing, the receivable, by $360,000. They did that. At the end of the day, there was some circumstantial evidence about these motherboards being buried, which was an inartful term that the Chinese guys used as in their second language. But there was no evidence that it was ever paid, that any money ever was paid. There was any damage to Zychronics as a result of that. And then there was the person who was running the phones every day, trying to find lower prices. She did find lower prices. She did not take into account, however, quality, warranty, vendor reputation, or terms of sale, all of which were important to Advantech, none of which were important to Zychronics. It was based on these facts, then, that the judge made the ruling on the motion to compel that she made. The motion fell through the cracks, clearly. It fell through the cracks twice, in my office and in her office. At the end of the day, we got to trial, and it was not ruled on. It seems to me that counsel at that point had an affirmative obligation to take some action when it realized that it had this motion to compel that it obviously considered very important concerning this ERP data, which counsel for Zychronics didn't know existed, nor did I know existed, prior to the deposition of Mr. Liu. At the end of the day, we would have supplied it had it been ordered. It was never ordered. And I told Mr. McMahon, when he pointed out to me that we were out of time on it, I said, get an order, we'll supply it. We didn't refuse to supply it. We were never ordered to supply it. And to my knowledge, I don't know how much data it is, but it's still there. With regard to the motion to compel, our position has been since the post-trial issues arose on this case that Mr. Sweetbaum abandoned that motion in the opening statement and chose to go ahead to trial without it.
Is this really an abandonment argument and not a mootness argument? Because I still, with all due respect, I can't understand the mootness argument as I understand the law of mootness. I understand the abandonment argument, and maybe if I'm missing it, I sincerely apologize, and you can help me. But I still don't see how it's moot. Even let's assume you have the timeline right. And Mr. Sweetbaum said we're going to go forward. One can construe that, I suppose, as he withdrew the motion or abandoned it. I still don't see how that gets you to mootness.
Well, the way I read it and the way I read in the record is that it became moot when Mr. Sweetbaum abandoned it. It was no longer on the table for a ruling. He said, I'm definitely going to trial, which obviously meant he had to go to trial without this information. And the judge at that point said it would be disrupting. He agreed with that. She said, I'm going to pass on this to be moved. That is the sequence, as I recall, and I believe the record will bear out. Nonetheless, the motion to compel was never ruled on. And somehow, the plaintiff has concluded that even though it was never ruled on, that there should have been an adverse inference because Advantech did not supply this information. Now, I've read the law on this very carefully, the Alloy decision, as well as the decisions that were cited in that ruling. And the way I understand the law on this issue, there has to be spoliation. It can be bad faith, it can be negligent, but the evidence has to be in some way destroyed. That didn't happen here. All of those cases that are cited in Alloy refer to evidence that's no longer available because of either bad faith or negligence. Neither one of those things happened in this case, and I don't think as a result of that, Alloy is applicable. The next issue that in the time remaining, or the two issues I want to talk about quickly, have to do with the warranty units. This was a...
Mr. Franks, I'm sorry, can I interrupt, if I may interrupt you? I want to make sure I asked the question that I didn't want to interrupt you before, but I wasn't sure you'd get to it. Could you help on the counterclaim? This goes to the fee question. What claim did your counterclaim relate to?
We had a number of breach contracts.
But the court award, I'm going to ask a very specific question. The court awarded $7,044 and some change. Was that a breach of contract claim or one of the other?
It was. It had to do with some warranty charges. Right. And
so it was not relating to the manufacturing agreement? Because this goes to the debate you gentlemen are having in your briefs about, you know, if it's a contract claim and one side wins a contract and the other side didn't, there's some law that speaks to that. If both sides won breach of contract claims, I think different law speaks to that. That's what I'm trying to figure out. What claim did you counterclaim did you win on?
We won on it. It was a warranty issue. It had to do with some charges that were levied in Utah, and the judge determined that those charges were not appropriate under the contract.
So was it under the manufacturing agreement?
It concerned the manufacturing agreement.
Right, thank you. And I apologize for interrupting.
That's quite all right. Anyway, with regard to these warranty issues on either 372 units or 33 units, plaintiff has made much of the fact that Judge Lemon relied on counsel's argument for evidence. That is clearly not the case, and the record demonstrates that. The statement of the president of Zychronix was that there are either 30 or 33 warranty units that are returned that Advantech has not returned back to us. She didn't know whether these were manufacturing defects, whether they were software problems, or whether they were units that were damaged by the customer. Nonetheless, in closing argument, I conceded that there were at most 33 units that were in play, which, using Judge Lemon's math, turned out to be $8,250. It wasn't necessarily a gift, but it was good faith recollection of the evidence. Judge Lemon never relied on my statements. It's in the record, and clearly in the record, and it's quoted in our brief. Finally, on the prevailing party issue, there is a great deal of case law on this subject that, frankly, I have found quite confusing until I figured out there is a key that one can use to determine whether it is a prevailing party case or a fee apportionment case. They are different. The key is the language in the contract. And in the cases that have been cited by plaintiff, Norton v. Webster, and Planning Partners v. QED, in both cases, those were not prevailing party contract clauses. And we believe that the law in Spencer Contracting, which was a prevailing party clause, which was almost identical to the prevailing party clause in our contract, provided for all attorney's fees to be awarded to the prevailing party, and pursuant to Archer v. Farmers Brothers, we believe that the trial court discretion in that should be very broad and be given consideration.
Well, the issue in Spencer, if I remember, one party won the breach of contract claim and the other party didn't have a breach of contract claim. Is that true?
That's true.
All right. Thank you.
And my time has expired, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Franks. Sweetbound, you've got a minute and 16 seconds.
I see that. Your Honor, I just want to address, I think, the three issues which have come up from your questions and Mr. Frank's argument regarding the abandonment issue. In order to find that I abandoned the motion to compel, I think you would have to find that I never discussed the issue again. In fact, I raised the issue during the trial. I raised the issue of closing. I asked for remedies. I continued to raise the fact that we had not received these documents. Simply because I did not object to the court wanting to proceed with a trial, something I concede I wanted as well, does not mean I abandoned. I had zero options at that point. I couldn't have said, Your Honor, I'm not going ahead with a trial. I had no choice but to proceed. Regarding the Ioli case, which deals with spoliation, they conceded they had those documents. That is tantamount to spoliation. They've never produced them. Finally, with respect to the attorney's fees issue, we received an award of $28,000 and change. They received an award of $7,000 and change. The court awarded them $180,000 or whatever number in attorney's fees. Your Honor, I think that because the court gave us the $28,000, I think we were the prevailing party, but the court ordered apportionment, and apportionment is what the new judge, Judge Stern, should have ordered.
I know your time's up, Mr. Sweetman. Let me just ask, do you agree that the counterclaim related to breach of the manufacturing agreement?
If I can give more than a one-word answer.
Yeah.
What had happened was our clients flew out to Utah to deal with some problems that they felt had to be corrected as a result of Advantech. The costs associated with going to Utah and fixing these problems, they calculated $7,000. They refused to pay the last $7,000 of the amount billed by Advantech. Advantech didn't accept that. That was a very, very, very small part of their counterclaim, which the judge.
But it was the counterclaim for breach of contract.
The judge didn't specifically state, but I think that's a reasonable inference. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank both counsel for your briefs and arguments today. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. Counsel, you're excused, and with the thanks of the court.